Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. We're the only podcast that keeps separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. A Boeing whistleblower testifies before the U.S. Senate.
The defense chiefs of China and the U.S. hold their first talks in 18 months.
Russia claims that Ukraine would use an Olympic truce to regroup militarily.
President Biden suggests U.S. military support for Israel will prevent Iranian escalation.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz meets with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Beijing.
The Senate kills articles of impeachment against Alexander Mayorkas.
The first jurists are selected in the Donald Trump hush money case.
A Muslim pupil loses a UK court bid to overturn a school's prayer ban.
Dubai is swamped by torrential flooding rainfall.
And an NPR editor resigns after going public with allegations of left-leaning bias.
In our top story, a Boeing whistleblower testifies before the U.S. Senate. The facts are agreed upon by CNN, Fox News, The Hill, Associated Press, Politico, and Independent. Boeing whistleblower Sam Salapour told the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Subcommittee on Investigations on Wednesday that the company has produced defective airplanes with gaps much wider than what its own standards allow. According to the quality engineer at Boeing, the plane maker has sped up the production of its 787 and 777 aircraft and ignored safety standards. On Monday, Boeing challenged these allegations. Salapour further claimed to be isolated and threatened for flagging safety concerns, adding that he is scared, but at peace. Last month, another whistleblower, John Barnett, was found dead in an apparent suicide. Meanwhile, the Senate Commerce Committee heard from an expert panel that found serious issues in Boeing's safety culture, including that personnel who raise concerns could be subject to retaliation. NASA's Tracy Dillinger said that Boeing employee surveys show that 95% of the respondents had no idea who their safety chief officer was, with Javier De Luis of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology adding that the self-certification program may have gone too far. These hearings come as several safety incidents with Boeing planes have been reported in recent months, most notably a mid-flight door plug blowout on an Alaska Airlines 737 MAX aircraft in January.
Thank you, Eric, for the facts on our first story today. I'm going to start our first round of narrative spins with a narrative A provided by Democracy Journal. For years, there have been whistleblower leaks and government warnings about the safety of Boeing's planes. Those concerns came to a head after a door plug blew out of an Alaska Airlines flight in January. Boeing's greed and fixation on profits led the company to cut corners on quality control and created a culture of intimidation. Numerous whistleblowers have spoken out against Boeing's reaction to safety hazard reports, but the company is clearly more concerned with a culture of silence than it is with safety.
Follow that with narrative B, coming from Wall Street Journal. While the profits over people claims that media in the U.S. has pushed to explain Boeing's safety problems may be appealing, the very idea that safety and shareholder returns are inversely related is entirely wrong. In fact, safety has enormously increased since the aviation industry was reorganized on competitive profit and loss lines in the 1970s. Boeing indeed has had at least partial responsibility in recent incidents. These problems will eventually be sorted out with training, repetition, standardization, and documentation.
The statistics nerds at Metaculus are going to jump in on our first story. They think that there's a 3% chance that commercial passengers will routinely fly in pilotless planes by the year 2030. U.S. and China defense chiefs hold their first talks in 18 months. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, The Japan Times, CNN, DW.com, Kyoto News, and NBC. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin held a video call with China's National Defense Minister Don Jung on Tuesday, marking the first direct conversation between both countries' defense chiefs in almost 18 months. The two discussed bilateral defense ties and regional and global security issues, with Austin stressing the importance of expanding military-to-military communication, according to the Pentagon. Austin reportedly emphasized the need to respect, quote, freedom of navigation, particularly in the South China Sea, and also addressed the Russian invasion of Ukraine and what he described as North Korea's latest provocations. Dong called for building mutual trust by gradually expanding military ties, according to the Chinese Ministry of Defense. He also stressed that the Taiwan issue is central to China's, quote, core interests, and that Beijing's maritime territorial sovereignty must be respected. The video call marks the first time Austin held talks with any Chinese counterpart since November of 2022. In April, the U.S. and Chinese militaries held talks on operational security in the air and at sea in Hawaii for the first time since 2021. Following the talks, the U.S. Navy on Wednesday flew Poseidon reconnaissance aircraft over the Taiwan Strait in international airspace, according to the Navy's 7th Fleet. China said it scrambled its own fighter jets to, quote, monitor the U.S. plane's passage.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The First Spin is a pro-establishment narrative coming from Daily Caller. The talks between the defense chiefs underline the U.S. desire to put bilateral military ties back on a solid footing. This is especially necessary at the risk of unintended escalation increased due to Beijing's hostile intercepts of U.S. aircraft and threats to Taiwan and other regional U.S. allies. The U.S. will continue to operate safely and responsibly where international law permits. And as mutual trust improves further, Beijing will realize that competition must not end in conflict.
That's going to be countered with the establishment critical narrative, and it's provided by Global Times. China welcomes the Austin-Dong talks, as building trust and defense ties is crucial for developing stable relations and preventing major crises. However, to avoid jeopardizing the encouraging process, the U.S. should refrain from playing a double game and take practical steps to maintain regional peace and stability. Beijing rejects any zero-sum logic, and peaceful coexistence is possible as long as China's territorial sovereignty and maritime rights are respected.
The Metaculous Prediction community always has something to chime in, and this time, it's a 32% chance that China will launch a full-scale invasion of Taiwan by the year 2035. Russia claims Ukraine would use an Olympic truce to regroup. The facts are agreed upon by Reuters, Ukrainska Pravda, The Economic Times, and First Post. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov has responded skeptically to French President Emmanuel Macron's call for a break in global conflicts during this year's Summer Olympics, which is being hosted by Paris. Macron on Tuesday said France would do everything possible to observe a ceasefire in Ukraine, Gaza, and Sudan between July 26th and August 11th, including engaging the Chinese President Xi Jinping in the effort. While Russia has yet to respond to Macron's proposal, Peskov, without citing specific incidents, said, quote, as a rule, the Kyiv regime uses such ideas and such initiatives to try to regroup, to try to rearm. Since Russia captured the town of Avdiivka in February, Ukraine has reportedly been running out of ammunition, with President Volodymyr Zelensky warning Moscow might launch a significant offensive in the late spring or summer. Last year, China, which has reportedly boosted trade ties with Moscow post its invasion of Ukraine, proposed a peace initiative that included basic principles but no specific terms to end the more than two-year-long war.
Thank you, Eric. The spin's going to begin with the anti-Russia narrative, and that's provided by Visit Ukraine. Holding a ceasefire during the Olympic Games is a tradition dating back to the ancient Greeks, and it should be honored around the world. Macron isn't just calling for Russia and Ukraine to lay down their weapons for 2 weeks, but for all warring factions to take a peaceful break from the cycle of violence.
RT International has a pro-Russian narrative. Ukraine has typically used ceasefire suggestions to rearm itself, so Russia must exercise caution and consider its own national security interests. Moscow has also been the one calling for actual peace agreements to end the war, but it refuses to take a temporary pause just because Kyiv is running out of bullets.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 4% chance that there will be a bilateral ceasefire or peace agreement in the Russo-Ukraine conflict in 2024, according to the Metaculous Prediction community. Not much of a chance. I think it's up by 1%.
1%.
That's something, I guess.
Well, you got to take all you can get.
You can't look a metaculous horse in the mouth.
You know, you're right. And I've done it before, and it really hurts when they smack back.
They don't brush their teeth either.
No, and plus, they will donkey kick you when you're not even paying attention.
According to President Biden, U.S. support for Israel will prevent Iranian escalation. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Wall Street Journal, Reuters, The Times of Israel, Jerusalem Post, and CBS. In an op-ed published on Wednesday, U.S. President Joe Biden called on Congress to pass legislation providing military aid to Israel and Ukraine, adding that his admin will not write, quote, blank checks. Biden argued that by readily supporting Israel, the U.S. could prevent Iran from escalating the conflict. Qatari Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani said on Wednesday that negotiations regarding the release of Israeli hostages and a ceasefire in Gaza have reached a delicate phase, referring to an unspecified stumbling block. Qatar, which has mediated the talks alongside Egypt, called on the international community to stop this war and accused Israel of using humanitarian aid as a, quote, tool for political blackmail, something Israel denies. Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan met with Hamas political leader Ismail Haniya in Qatar on Wednesday to discuss the war in Gaza. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is expected to meet with Haniya this weekend, with Erdogan referring to him as the leader of the Palestinian cause and Hamas as a liberation movement. On the Lebanese border, the Israeli military said that a Hezbollah attack on Arab al-Aramshi in northern Israel injured 18 people on Wednesday, including 14 soldiers. The military said that it targeted Hezbollah sites in Naqoura and Yarin. In Gaza, Israel claimed on Wednesday that it had scaled up our capabilities regarding aid deliveries into the besieged strip. Israel blamed the UN for the famine conditions seen in Gaza, with the UN saying that the problem is distribution and the lack of civil infrastructure in the strip after months of Israeli bombardment.
Adam, thanks for laying out the facts. Let's check out some of the spins. The first one is a pro-establishment narrative. It's coming from CNN. The U.S. is doing everything it can to ensure that Israel deter military threats while also preventing regional escalation. Israel must be able to defend itself from terrorist attacks, whether from Gaza or elsewhere, and the U.S. will always defend Israel's right to security. Nonetheless, it's not in the U.S. or Israel's best interest to see the conflict escalate. Thankfully, Israel, with the assistance of the U.S. and its regional allies, managed to effectively counter Iran's attack, and any further military actions are completely unnecessary.
Eric, the Hill is going to counter that with the pro-Israel narrative. The U.S.-Israeli relationship is one of the best strategic investments the U.S. has made in the last 50 years. Besides the fact that arms sales to Israel directly support American industry, Israel's security is the U.S.'s security, as both countries are fighting the same enemies. Of course, the U.S. and Israel do not agree on everything, having their ups and downs, but nonetheless, the U.S. support for Israel effectively guarantees the U.S. a strong position in the Middle East.
And the pro-Palestine narrative comes from Responsible Statecraft. Reflexive U.S. support for Israel over the decades has finally culminated in a horrifying display of human brutality and mass famine against the Palestinian people. Besides moral consideration around supporting Israel's slaughter in Gaza, Israel has consistently proven time and time again that it is a bad ally that is highly unreliable. While American and Israeli interests continue to diverge, successive American leaders have failed to recalibrate. Now the U.S. is risking a regional war by supporting a rogue Israeli state.
A pro-Iranian narrative is going to continue the spin, and it's brought to us by Al Mayadeen. Iran continues to demonstrate its capabilities and restraint as the attack over the weekend will hopefully serve as a wake-up call to Israel to end this series of escalations. Iran and its allies have been clear from day one that they do not want to see this war spiral into a regional conflict. Rather, Iran only seeks to end Israel's crimes in Gaza, to which it has been forced to respond. Israel made a mistake in believing that Iran would not respond to its provocations, and Iran's leadership will continue to calculate its moves appropriately.
There's a 1% chance that Hamas will have de facto power in the Gaza Strip on January 1st, 2025. That's a nerd narrative from Attaculous. The Chinese president meets with the German chancellor. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Bloomberg, MFA, Politico, YouTube, German Economic Institute, or IW, and South China Morning Post. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz met with Chinese President Xi Jinping and Premier Li Keqiang in Beijing on Tuesday as part of a four-day visit to China. According to China's foreign ministry, Xi and Scholz engaged in talks at the Diaoyutai State Guesthouse, where the two discussed trade restrictions, climate change, EU-China relations, Russia-Ukraine, and Israel-Palestine. Scholz is reported to have asked Xi to contribute more to a just peace in Ukraine, while the Chinese president called for equal participation from both Russia and Ukraine to discuss an end to the conflict. Speaking at a press conference following talks with Xi and Li, Scholz stated that the two nations had been pragmatic over economic discussions, including discourse concerning a level playing field for German companies in China and a global trade model without unfair trade practices. According to a study published in April by the German Economic Institute, prior to Scholz's trip to China in 2023, 200 industry-related product groups with high import dependencies of at least 50% from China were present in Germany. Despite this, Xi stated that relations between Germany and China possessed no fundamental conflict of interests, that cooperation with Beijing was not a risk, and that both countries needed to be wary of the rise of protectionism.
A pro-China narrative is going to begin the spin, and it's provided by China Daily. Tuesday's meeting between President Xi and Chancellor Scholz is a testament to the ever-growing relationship between China and Germany. With both economies now deeply intertwined and the highly successful working relationship between the two countries highlights what can be achieved when East and West choose to cooperate. Together, China and Germany will only prosper as they continue communicating from positions of respect and strength.
The anti-China narrative comes from Le Monde. By speaking of open and fair cooperation with Beijing, Scholz's Germany has shown itself to be nothing but naive in believing that its ultra-dependent relationship with China will benefit anything but President Xi's long-term political goals. Scholz's inability to adequately stand up to Xi is further proof that Europe must not become fragmented in its battle against China. Germany already made the calamitous mistake in recent history of believing Russia could be rationally trusted. This cannot happen again with Beijing.
The nerds think that there's a 50% chance that the next great power war will take place by the year 2030.
And that's according to the Meticulous Prediction Community.
We solved the enigma. We solved the enigma.
You okay, Mr. Enigma?
The Senate kills articles of impeachment against Mayorkas. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CNN, ABC News, NBC, and Fox News. After the U.S. House voted to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas in February and sent the articles to the Senate on Tuesday, the Senate on Wednesday began proceedings over whether to hold a vote on removing him from office, rapidly killing the articles of impeachment. Mayorkas faced two articles of impeachment, the first accusing him of, quote, willful and systemic refusal to comply with the immigration law, and the second being, quote, breach of public trust. He has called both accusations baseless. The hearing began with Republican Senator Eric Schmidt, the Republican from Missouri, objecting to Senator Leader Chuck Schumer, the Democrat from New York, his proposed time frame for debate and voting on the two articles of impeachment. Schumer proposed 1 hour of debate on the first article, with 7 points of order, and 1 hour of debate and 1 point of order for the second article. Schmidt objected to Schumer's proposal, so Schumer held a vote to nullify the objection. Schumer argued the articles don't, quote, allege a high crime or misdemeanor, which Schmidt replied that the Senate has, quote, never before dismissed or tabled articles of impeachment against a living person. The Senate, along partisan lines, voted to kill both articles.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin is a Republican narrative coming from the Wall Street Journal. Since taking charge of the DHS, Secretary Mayorkas has purposely ignored the border crisis and allowed it to worsen. Unlike the Republicans, who allowed two impeachment votes on Donald Trump during his presidency, the Senate Democrats seem ready to violate their constitutional obligation to do the same here. Their decision to block this trial is solely aimed at preventing the GOP from presenting evidence of Mayorkas' failure to protect American borders.
The Democratic narrative is provided by the office of Senator Ed Markey. Articles of impeachment should only go to trial if they're based on genuine, evidence-based grievances. Unfortunately, the American people are watching their Republican lawmakers turn this historically serious congressional process into a political circus. Every accusation against Mayorkas has been debunked by the courts, but instead of acknowledging that fact and seeking legislative paths toward fixing immigration, the GOP wanted to score political infotainment points. Infotainment?
I guess just all the politics that's on TV that entertains people.
Infotainers are entertainers who, in infotainment media, such as news anchors and satirists who cross the line between journalism and entertainment. So Jon Stewart.
And so would Bill Maher.
We're infotainers. We're infotaining.
The nerds from Metaculus say there's a 50% chance that the rate of immigration enforcement in the U.S. in 2024, as a percentage of removals to encounters, will be at least 5.79%.
Well, that's a relief. Or is it? Or is that a concern? I don't know.
Latest in the Trump Manhattan trial, the first jurors have been selected. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, The Guardian, and Fox News. The first 7 out of 12 jurors have been selected in former U.S. President Donald Trump's hush money trial in Manhattan. Another 5 jurors are now needed, as well as 6 alternates. More than half of the jury pool was excused at once, leaving the jury with 3 women and 4 men from Manhattan. They include a charter school teacher, a software engineer, a salesman, a corporate lawyer, and an oncology nurse. While Trump reportedly faces an uphill battle in deeply Democratic New York City, one selected juror, a woman from Harlem, said she appreciates how he, quote, speaks his mind. Others, however, were dismissed by the defense for their anti-Trump social media posts. When asked about his opinions on Trump, another prospective juror conceded that he's a Democrat, but added, "When I walk in here, Trump is a defendant." The woman who said she likes his brashness also noted that she doesn't care for the views of Trump. Trump was also heard speaking at the hearing, to which Judge Juan Merchan said, quote, "I won't tolerate that. I won't have any jurors intimidated in this courtroom." This follows Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's request that Trump be held in contempt of court. Following Tuesday's hearing, Trump visited an Upper Manhattan bodega, the site of a 2022 attack on a store employee. While there, he promised to straighten out New York by working with the Democratic mayor and governor.
Thanks for the facts, Eric. Here's the spin with an anti-Trump narrative provided by the New York Times. While Trump complains that he can't possibly get a fair trial in a city that voted overwhelmingly against him, the history of well-instructed jurors proves otherwise. Every juror chosen will have undergone a lengthy selection process full of questionnaires and one-on-one consultations with the judge and lawyers. The only unexpected trouble Trump could face is anything he brings upon himself by impulsively speaking in violation of court rules.
Town Hall comes back with a pro-Trump narrative. Not only has District Attorney Alvin Bragg turned a normal campaign finance violation into a bogus felony charge, but the judge, in this case, has allowed clearly compromised people onto the jury. For instance, one woman Judge Merchan allowed on the jury allegedly attended an anti-Trump event in 2020. Revealing the occupations of these jurors was also a bad decision by the court. If their identities are uncovered, it could compromise their decisions in this Blue City trial.
Oh, Eric, it looks like the nerds think that there's a 75% chance that Donald Trump will be found guilty of any crime in the Manhattan case before Election Day of 2024.
And that's according to the Metaculus prediction community.
That percentage has gone up since I've read it last, don't you think?
Yeah.
That's considerably
Hi.
It has. And you I did have one question. Are you planning on wearing your Trump high tops when you go vote?
My Trump high tops? No, I'm not taking those things out of the glass case. They stay on the shelf next to the infinity candle. Did you get your Trump infinity candle? Oh, you got to get it. It's beautiful. Beautiful. Okay.
News out of the UK where a Muslim student loses their prayer ban case. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, Sky News, Judiciary.UK, Fox News, and India Today. An unnamed student has lost a UK High Court challenge against a prayer ban imposed by her secondary school in northwest London. The unnamed student sued Brent Michael's Community School, claiming the ban unfairly targeted her faith and that the school's stance alienated religious minorities. Within the approved judgment, the High Court concluded that by implementing a ban on the prayer ritual, the school had neither breached Article 9 of the European Convention of Human Rights, or the ECHR, nor the public sector duty found within the Equality Act of 2010. Justice Linden wrote that the unnamed student had chosen to study at a secular school, quote, which she knew had a strict behavioral regime, and that Islam permitted Qadr prayers to, quote, make up for those missed in the day. The rule was introduced in 2023 after students began using the schoolyard for prayer during their lunch break and later experienced bomb threats in connection to the ritual. Catherine Burblesinge, the school's headmistress, claimed as a secular institution with Sikh, Hindu, and Christian students, the institution could not make exceptions within its inclusive environment.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin is Narrative A coming from Evening Standard. Schools should not be places of worship. Instead, they must strive to be academic powerhouses that emphasize discipline, inclusivity, and a focus on education above all else. This entails embracing a diverse student body while prioritizing unity and academic excellence. Effective leadership in education must transcend all cultural and religious boundaries.
Narrative B is provided by Guardian. Mikela Community School's strict secularism clashes with its diverse student body, raising questions about true cultural inclusivity. While promoting British values and religious development is crucial, this doesn't have to be at the expense of private spiritual worship. The High Court's acknowledgement of indirect discrimination against Muslim while doing nothing to remedy the issue is further proof that Islamophobia continues to be normalized within British society.
Heavy rains and a rare flash flood batters Dubai. Here are the facts as agreed upon by ABC News, Fox Weather, BBC News, NDTV, The Guardian, and Associated Press. Severe storms lashed the United Arab Emirates on Tuesday, unleashing nearly 2 years' worth of rain on the desert city of Dubai in just 24 hours. According to the UAE National Center of Meteorology, nearly 6.26 inches, or 159 millimeters of rain, fell over the emirate, which receives 3.12 inches, or 79 millimeters of rain on average per year. Subsequent flash flooding inundated Dubai International Airport, leading to a temporary diversion of inbound flights. Floodwaters reportedly cut off roads, submerged residences and vehicles, and swamped key infrastructures, including the Mall of the Emirates and a Dubai metro station. Schools remain closed across the UAE, while Dubai government personnel have been instructed to work remotely as more rain is expected. In neighboring Oman, torrential rains have so far killed at least 18, including 10 students who died when their vehicle was swept away in flash floods.
Thank you, Eric. Narrative A is provided by Down to Earth. Extreme weather events in Dubai, known for its dry conditions and arid climate, raise concerns about the increasingly evident impact of climate change in a region unaccustomed to heavy rain and flash flooding. Before exceptional weather becomes a regularity in the future as the planet warms, the UAE, one of the world's biggest oil producers, must curb carbon emissions to mitigate the potentially dangerous impacts of climate change.
Narrative B is from CNN. The rains that swamped Dubai resulted from a larger storm system traversing the Arabian Peninsula and moving across the Gulf of Oman, bringing unusually wet weather. It's far too early to indicate that climate change played a role in the massive storms. Moreover, the city experienced rare flooding because its infrastructure wasn't designed to handle such unexpected rare weather events, given the lack of regular rainfall.
Well, the nerds think that there's a 95% chance that there will be at least 2 degrees Celsius of global warming by the year 2100.
And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
In our final story today, an NPR editor resigns after publishing an essay alleging a left-leaning bias. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the New York Times, X, NPR Online News, the FP, CNN, and Fox News. Yuri Berliner, an employee of National Public Radio, or NPR, for 25 years, who had been suspended after publishing an essay accusing the network of liberal bias, resigned from the media outlet on Wednesday. In a statement on X, Berliner said he had quit after being disparaged by NPR's chief executive officer, claiming their divisive views confirming the very problems at NPR I cited in my Free Press essay. Berliner was suspended last Friday for violating NPR's policy that bans journalists from taking up outside work without prior approval and releasing proprietary data about the network's confidential audience demographics. In his essay published on April 9th in the Free Press, Berliner said that NPR had, quote, lost America's trust, allegedly because, quote, an open-minded spirit no longer exists within NPR, as it caters to a distilled worldview of a very small segment of the U.S. population. Though he claimed that NPR had lost viewpoint diversity and was telling listeners how to think, Berliner rejected calls to defund the network and rejected the notion that it was a liberal disinformation machine, a characterization used by former President Trump. Following his suspension, Edith Chapin, NPR's editor-in-chief, sent a memo to NPR's employees, stating that she strongly disagreed with Berliner's assessment of the network's journalism and claimed that inclusion was crucial to providing nuanced stories.
Adam, thanks for presenting the facts. The first spin is a left narrative coming from NPR Online News. Berliner deserved disciplinary action for not reaching out to NPR before publishing his op-ed. While he was entitled to free speech as a private citizen, Berliner had no right to violate NPR's internal policy as a journalist on its payroll. By going to another news outlet with his network's scathing criticism, the veteran editor violated trust and reached the point of no return.
Oh, I've got a right narrative to counter that left narrative, and it's provided by The Telegraph. Berliner has paid the price for exposing NPR's far-left-leaning bias. No longer focused on truth, the organization has moved from objective reporting to partisan favoritism. As political polarization continues to grow, Berliner's resignation should stir up a fresh debate around taxpayer-funded public media's sizable shift to appease the far left.
The nerds from Metaculous say there's a 75% chance that the U.S. will continuously be a liberal democracy until 2040. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, April 18th, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.
Shooby-dooby-doo!